Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 12:59 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time, and today is January 25th. Well, I thought we'd kick off today with what might be considered to be safe haven assets, because the 10-year Treasury is compressed by over 5 basis points. It doesn't sound like a lot historically, but when the yield is only 1%, it's a lot. And we're coming back towards this psychological 1% level. We're only a couple of basis points away from it, so it's a natural area where we might anticipate the first evidence of some resistance, but there is the other way of thinking about it, and it is that there might be some outsized demand for some safe haven assets, because we've got stock markets that have been surging higher, and I think we have to also pay some due attention to the fact that the number of shares that are in fact surging higher has been relatively small, and some have done extraordinarily well, perhaps too well in a very short period of time, so we're due consolidation. And we've got short-term overbought conditions on a lot of indices, so if we're moving into more of a risk-off environment, well then that would naturally create a bid for safe haven assets like bonds, and we might see the 1% level taken out. But of course, at those sorts of corrective phases are generally reasonably short-term in nature, and it would only set up the next successful shorting opportunity in terms of the bond market overall. Then let's think about other safe haven assets. Well, gold falls into that category as well. It hasn't really moved very much. It's right in the region of its trend mean. It still has the sequence of lower rally highs since August. It hasn't quite broken them yet, and there hasn't been anything in the way of upward dynamics over the last couple of days. The most recent was about 4 days ago, but it is holding the $1,800 area, and if we are moving more into a risk-off environment for stock markets, well then gold will experience less competitive forces from the outperformance of equities. And particularly since we remain in a negative real interest rate environment, there is still clear potential that gold will continue to outperform. As we think about the kinds of things that people have been buying, well, Bitcoin has been one of those assets that did spectacularly well, but it has lost uptrend consistency. This reaction is much larger than any reaction on in percentage terms since we've seen the low in March. So this, and it still has that downward bias overall, even though it is still holding the 30,000 area. And it really will need to continue to hold the low put in last week if we are still in a medium-term demand-dominated environment overall. In the event that the $30,000 level is taken out, well then there is the potential that this is a medium-term peak for Bitcoin, and I'm starting to see more people talking about the fact that Bitcoin leads the S&P 500. There's good rationale for that. It's a lightning rod for speculation, and we are in a very speculative environment. So people generally will migrate towards the assets that have got the greatest momentum behind them and the greatest potential for outsized gains when there is a strong momentum play. And as money flows out of those momentum plays, then it has a knock-on effect for the performance of wider portfolios. Then people tend to sell the things they can, not so much the things they want to, and it leads to a broader corrective phase overall. So Bitcoin has been doing spectacularly well. It is still above that 30,000 level, and when we then think about Ethereum, it was up in a dynamic manner over the weekend, but it wasn't able to hold all of its gain in here today, and it closed below the $1,400 level. I regard it as high beta Bitcoin. And it is now starting to outperform the Bitcoin price. So there's definitely some evidence that Ethereum has been moving to outperformance in January, and that is consistent with a really rather bullish environment overall. But obviously, if Bitcoin were to break down, Ethereum is unlikely to hold up against that kind of onslaught of selling. The other asset that does tend to catch a bid when we are in a risk-off environment is the yen. and it has been really rather quiet. There is a very clear downward bias for the dollar over the course of the last year. It's still intact, and it would really need to sustain a move above the trend mean to question that hypothesis. As we then think about the dollar index, it is oversold and it was a little steadier in here today. It has put in a higher reaction low and is holding that 90 level. And I do think that there is scope for some additional upside in the event that we do move into more of a corrective phase for stock markets. There are a couple of different ways of thinking about the market right now. The Nasdaq, for example, popped on the upside in here right off the open, gave up all of the advance, and was looking like a failed upside. Well, it was looking like a downside Q reversal for a while, and then by the close, it recouped all of the decline. So that's really rather impressive. And then when we think about some of the larger companies, well, Apple, for example, it has pushed on to new highs. It's been consolidating for the last 4 months, maybe almost 5 months. It could have been a failed upside break today, but it recouped all of the intraday losses. So that's really quite positive as well. And it is completing what was an orderly consolidation. Netflix is now back testing the $550 area. It really does have to hold that area if this is not going to be a failed upside break. Amazon has also been steadying, although it was really quite volatile in here. It didn't go anywhere today. Of course, then we also had the kind of volatility that we've seen on smaller companies like GameStop. I thought that it was all over on Friday, and between the close on Friday, it went up another $100 at one point in here today, and it's still finishing in positive territory. But these kinds of moves are quite frankly ridiculous. There's absolutely nothing to base it on other than the bigger fool theory. And obviously, this is also very much reflective of the very liquid environment we have, which is encouraging speculation. But until we actually see that there is clear evidence of concrete efforts by governments to curtail their spending or central banks to either raise interest rates or remove money supply, then we're going to remain in a very liquid environment overall where I guess people will be rewarded for speculating. The negative real interest rate overall might be rewarding Tesla, for example, but it's obviously robbing savers. That's why gold prices aren't breaking down, but they do need some additional catalysts to start to push it up on the upside. Now, when we think about the rest of the world, well, the majority of European indices were in negative territory today, but that was probably more reflective of the early weakness on Wall Street and rather than the rebound that we saw at the end of the day. Xi Jinping was making a statement or gave a speech today at the online Davos conference and making very placating statements, which basically amount to extorting or asking the rest of the world to appease China and let them do whatever they want. Obviously, that is going to fall on deaf ears. In some quarters, it will be certainly also appreciated by other people. But one thing was for certain was that after his speech, the stock market in Hong Kong, for example, continued to advance. It is now pushing through the 30,000 level and it has broken the medium-term downtrend. As we think about the H-share index, the China Enterprises Index, then it has also broken a 3-year downtrend. So it's increasingly pushing up. And the Hong Kong indices are now outperforming the CSI 300, but the CSI 300 has broken higher. So it is being led higher by companies like Kweichow Moutai and others. But then we also have the fact that this trend is still not over and it's continuing to accelerate. Pinduoduo in the USA has also continued to advance. It's another share that was quite volatile in intraday trading. So we're definitely getting a little bit of indecision coming through in here. Now, one thing that I think is particularly interesting is when we look at the advanced decline line for the NASDAQ composite. It has now clearly broken out and it has completed this range that's been underway since 2008. So it's completing a base formation, which would suggest that in terms of the breadth of the market, that it's improving. Now you can also see that it's been in negative territory for what must feel like forever. And you have to go all the way back to 1997 for a time when the NASDAQ advanced decline line was in fact in positive territory. What it tells us is that for an awfully long time, all the way through until about 2012, there wasn't a great deal of enthusiasm for NASDAQ listed shares. That on average, share prices were declining. Now that started to change in 2012, and now it is breaking higher. And what that is much more representative of is smaller cap companies. So the Russell 2000 is populated by a significant number of those smaller NASDAQ companies. Of course, the advanced decline line is not market cap weighted. So it considering that at the top 10 shares represent almost 30% of the NASDAQ 100, that's completely irrelevant to the performance of the advanced decline line. So it's simply telling us how many shares are rising and falling. And right now, more shares are rising than falling, and it has broken out. Well, this very accommodative environment is certainly helping small caps. Now, the Russell 2000 was in negative territory today, but with the potential for economic reflation and the rollout of vaccines planned for the rest of the year. Moderna, for example, has rebounded over the last couple of weeks. The biotech index continues to extend its breakout, and it was in additional positive territory in here today. And this also looks like a very clear base formation completion. There are obviously a lot of fears about the number of variants of the coronavirus that continue to spread. Obviously, there is the one in the UK, there's the one in South Africa, which is slightly different, and then there's also one that is just been identified in California. The more we know about the virus, the more the more kinds are, I guess, the greater the scope is for scary headlines. But the reality is that the UK is now moving ahead with a proof of use case for ivermectin. So that is an over-the-counter treatment that there's a lot of anecdotal evidence for, and with the potential that we're going to have results from a broad spectrum proof of use case, then it opens the door to a much better range of potential solutions. So it might feel like a game of whack-a-mole where new variants are popping up, and then the big question is whether the vaccines that are being produced are going to be effective. How long are they going to be effective for? Are we all going to need booster shots once a year after all of this ends? Is this going to be like the annual flu epidemics that come through, that we're going to have an annual COVID one as well. I think that is small price to pay for the majority of people, particularly elderly people. And there is the clear scope that as we head towards the middle of the year, that a lot of the fears that people have are going to be receding because we're going to have a lot more vaccines to distribute to at-risk groups. Well, of course, then we also have the fudging of the testing, and there is the obvious clear potential that there is going to be a downtrend in the number of cases identified as either lower cycles of the PCR test are deployed so that it cuts down on false positives, or that the lockdowns that have been announced internationally go into effect, or that the increasing pace of vaccination will start to bend the curve as well. So there are plenty of potential areas where we can anticipate good news. But the important point is that the stock market continues to do reasonably well, but we have got these short-term overbought conditions. As we think about where the potential is, well, it's going to be in emerging markets simply because they have got stronger currencies. They have not engaged in the same kind of abuse of their public finances as developed markets, and there is the clear scope that they're going to come out of the pandemic era in much stronger form overall. But I think that we are due some pause in consolidation, and therefore the risk of a reversion towards the mean has certainly increased. That's certainly true in places like India. It's true on Wall Street and in Europe. But we may not see more than a reversion towards the mean because the breadth of the market is picking up. I think that even though what we've seen today was more demand for the kinds of things that did really well during the lockdowns, like the stay-at-home champions, and that is more a reflection of anxiety about the new variants than any other factor, but it's unlikely to be as permanent an effect as we had at the onset of the pandemic a year ago. Therefore, that's probably short-term in nature. In the meantime, I don't believe that central banks are going to engage in a lot more additional stimulus until they have a good reason to. And right now, they are short of good reasons to, and that would suggest that the risk of consolidation does look to be heightened at this stage. What it also suggests is that we're likely to see a buying opportunity. What's been particularly clear about the jump in demand from retail investors is that they're primarily younger people, and that people that have seen more than one cycle have been very much more risk averse. We're unlikely to see a bubble pop until everybody is committed, and I do think that we have got some evidence of bubbly activity arising, but I don't believe the bubble is close to popping. In order for a bubble to pop, what you need is a massive increase in the supply of stock. Now, there has certainly been an increase in the supply of stock, but it is not nearly large enough in terms of magnitude to really overwhelm demand. And then you also need to have tighter monetary and fiscal conditions, and we are nowhere near that. So there is the clear scope that we are going to see an additional push on the upside, and that further accelerations are in the future. But in the short term, I think that we are liable to have some pause in consolidation. And with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.